to Division 7 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have two cases set for the 1:30 docket this afternoon. The first is Lafarge North American versus KECI. The second is City of Fort Morgan versus Eastern Colorado Publishing. Are counsel here and ready in both of those cases?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Has counsel checked in for the second case completely, bailiff?
No.
Okay.
For the
City of Fort Morgan. No, I'm talking about the second case on the 1:30.
Yes,
everybody's checked in on the second.
Everybody has. Okay, thank you. You may sit down. I assume that everybody's had a chance to read a copy of our procedures, which are there on the table in front of you, or are otherwise experienced and knowledgeable of our procedures. The only thing that I would like to remind everybody of, everybody in the room, that is that you should turn off any phones, pagers, if anybody carries those anymore, Blackberries, iPhones, all that sort of thing, anything that might make noise unexpectedly during the argument today. With that, we are ready to proceed with the first case, Lafarge versus KECI.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jennifer Palmer and I represent KECI on this appeal. This is a case about the interpretation of insurance and indemnification provisions in a construction subcontract. The trial court ruled that KECI was responsible to defend and indemnify Lafarge for Lafarge's own conduct. In effect, that means that the trial court ruled that KECI was responsible to defend and indemnify Lafarge for Lafarge's willful and wanton conduct. It's KECI's position that the trial court erred in its interpretations of this subcontract. The factual background behind this case is that KECI was the flagging subcontractor responsible for traffic control on a road construction project on I-70. KECI's involvement was governed by a subcontract between the parties that had insurance and indemnification provisions. That night, KECI was providing flagging operations on the project when it was informed that Lafarge was going to end its operations early and it was asked to close down an entrance ramp to I-70 so that it could then assist Lafarge's paving equipment to exit the wrong way off that entrance ramp. KECI was in the process of doing so, driving around to exit at Wadsworth and come around and get back on the highway so that it could block off the entrance and then come up and assist the Lafarge paving equipment off the highway safely, when Lafarge's employee decided to disregard the established written procedures, exit across a live lane of traffic without being on a trailer and without being escorted by the flagging contractor, KECI, and then drive down this entrance, a single lane entrance, the wrong way in the dark after midnight, blocking the entirety of the only lane of travel, seeing full well, he admitted in deposition, that the lane was still open to travel, and then stop and adjust some equipment for a couple of minutes while KECI had not yet even informed it that it was safe to move and had not started to progress it out of the safety of the construction zone.
Counsel, let me ask you this. The allegations in the complaint named Lafarge, but also KECI, as liable for negligence. Isn't that right?
That's true. Both defendants were named by the plaintiff.
And from a duty to defend standpoint, aren't you at that point obligated to present, to provide a defense to Lafarge under your agreement?
No. This subcontract had specific language in it that specifically limited KECI's responsibilities to KECI's contract. That kind of language, limiting and specifically referencing the conduct of KECI, is echoed throughout the several paragraphs of the indemnification provision of the subcontract and the insurance provision of the subcontract. The amended complaint in this action did specifically identify Lafarge for Lafarge's conduct, and it described the conduct that was being alleged against Lafarge. It's willful and wanton disregard of common sense and the established procedures of the flagging contract, and it identified separate and distinct conduct by KECI, going too slowly in driving and implementing its safety procedures to close that ramp. And so there was no trigger of the duty of defense under this indemnification provision, because the indemnification language specifically limits to conduct arising out of the act or omission of KECI. Now, this case, the interpretation of this provision is governed by a few of the Colorado cases on this. One of those is the public service case, which has been around for a long time, and it is distinguishable in this case because the public service case interpreted an indemnification provision with a much broader trigger for the application of either the duties of defense or the duties of indemnity.
In what way was it broader?
That the public service contract referenced that the indemnitor was responsible to indemnify the indemnity for any actions arising out of the exercise of the indemnitor's rights under the contract. Now, this court itself has distinguished the public service case. In the Boulder Plaza case, this court looked at the language in the indemnification provision and looked to see what kind of language the contracting parties used to specify whose conduct should be indemnified for. And there's a long history of Colorado case law saying that if you want to be indemnified for your own separate conduct, that you need to do so clearly and unequivocally, and you need to express that in language that's plain so that a reviewing court can be firmly convinced that indemnification is required. Now, it's our position that this subcontract clearly did not require KECI to indemnify Lafarge for its own separate conduct as alleged against it. However, if this court disagrees, there is two reasonable interpretations of this contract which would set up an ambiguity on this. One is that a reasonable interpretation is the position taken by Lafarge in the trial court, that Lafarge is protected against anything it does, even remotely and tenuously connected with flagging operations. And the other is KECI's position that the specific reference to acts or omissions of KECI in this contract mean that KECI is only responsible to defend and indemnify against its own conduct. Lafarge was never sued by the Miller plaintiffs in the underlying claim for imputed or vicarious liability. All Lafarge was ever sued for specifically was conduct of a distinct character from the conduct that KECI was sued for.
Ms. Palmer, the allegations in the underlying complaint, though, did allege that Lafarge and KECI were collectively negligent. And it said that the injuries were the result of, quote, their individual and collective negligent conduct, end quote. So the complaint did not allege, as you say, merely distinct acts separable from each other so that the conduct was separable from the conduct of the other party. It was alleging, at least in part, that there was collective action by the two parties that was negligent. Isn't that right?
You know, the parties aren't going to dispute that the safety at this site was a shared responsibility. And it's true that the word collective appears in the First Amendment complaint that was filed by the Miller plaintiffs. However, the factual allegations underpinning that conclusory word of collectivity is very distinct. There's no suggestion in the Miller plaintiff's amended complaint that the KECI was acting arm in arm with Lafarge in engaging in the safety practices at this construction site that day. So no, I don't believe that word is dispositive of the obligations under this contract. Did you have a question? I thought a moment ago you looked like
you. I just want to ask a point of clarification. I take it there's no dispute that the agreement the subcontract does impose a duty to defend. It's just that you're saying it doesn't apply in these particular circumstances that are presented here?
Right. The subcontract specifically talks about holding harmless against claims, and it would uncover both defense and indemnification. But your point is a good one. It leads me to another point that I wanted to raise while I have time remaining. There's a big difference between the duty of defense and the duty of indemnity. A duty, even if there is a duty of defense triggered by the allegations of the amended complaint, that does not mean necessarily that there is any obligation to indemnify. Lafarge and the trial court have taken the position that the breach of the duty of defense necessarily means that there's been a breach of the duty of indemnity, or that there's been a waiver of the right to contest indemnification. And Colorado law is plainly against that conclusion. The Burlington Northern Railroad case specifically talks about the obligation of looking at the contract to see whether or not there's been a trigger of the duty of indemnification. Burlington Northern involved a case where it was a sidetrack agreement on a railroad case, and the one party had agreed to keep the tracks clear of any obstructions. It was undisputed that party did not do that. There was an obstruction which caused an injury. And so then the Burlington Railroad case went on to analyze a party's claim for indemnification when they had gone ahead and settled that case. And so Lafarge cites this case with the belief that it means that there is no requirement to demonstrate that there was a trigger for the duty of indemnification. Here, no fact finder has ever concluded that KECI was in any way responsible for the injuries that Mr. and Mrs. Miller incurred on the road that night.
And counsel, I want to go back to my point, because I understand the duty to indemnify is being different from the duty to defend as well. My earlier question was solely addressed to the duty to defend, and that is, if the plaintiffs in the lawsuit allege negligence against your client, weren't you obligated at that point under the duty to defend? I'm not talking about indemnify at this point. To defend them in the lawsuit, they being Lafarge.
No, because the language in the indemnification provision is specifically linked to an act or omission of KECI. So it talks about if Lafarge has a claim against it for KECI's conduct. Lafarge wasn't sued for KECI's conduct. We have a pro rata scheme in this state, and there was no allegations of vicarious or imputed liability. Lafarge was sued for Lafarge's conduct. And so this duty of defense, it is KECI's position, is specifically restricted to an obligation to defend if Lafarge is sued for KECI's conduct. And that's the purpose. Interpreting it in the way that the trial court did disregards the language in this indemnification provision that talks about an act or omission of KECI. Why have that language at all if the sentence could have just stopped before that phrase if the meaning was as the trial court has concluded?
Well, counsel, the language does have a use, even in the other interpretation. It limits the liability to situations in which KECI is at least partially at fault. Therefore, if KECI is not at least partially at fault, there's no obligation to indemnify.
And if that's how the court's going to interpret it, then there really should be a hearing to determine if we are ever even at fault. But the contract specifies an act or omission. Lafarge has to defend and indemnify KECI has to defend or indemnify Lafarge against claims brought against Lafarge for an act or omission of KECI. And so there's that's the purpose behind that language, and it really reinforces the reason for having to have a trigger of that indemnity if a fact finder determines KECI was not at all responsible. There are also issues in this case with respect to the punitive damages. KECI believes that it should have had a hearing to apportion any amounts that were attributable to punitive damages. Interpreting this contract to require KECI to defend and indemnify Lafarge for willful and wanton conduct, certainly.
Can I ask some clarification about that? So it's your position that under those circumstances, assuming you reach that point, KECI should not be responsible for punitive damages. Would it be responsible for actual damages based on the intentional or willful conduct of Lafarge, were that to be proven?
Because of Colorado's strict construction of these kinds of indemnification, limiting against indemnifying another party for their own conduct, I say the answer should be no to that question. They should not have to indemnify for that kind of conduct, even if there's an interpretation that they're required to indemnify Lafarge for Lafarge's own conduct.
Was that now just in the trial court?
What's that?
Was the argument you just stated made in the trial court?
We argued in the trial court that we're not responsible for punitive damages and that it would be against public policy to require that. The Bowles case was just decided on Monday by the Colorado Supreme Court, and it's directly, it makes a statement in there that the Colorado Supreme Court that has made clear that in no event could public policy permit an exculpatory agreement to shield against a claim for willful and wanton. And this is not an exculpatory, this is an indemnity, but the public policy underlying it remains the same, that there should not be protection. A party cannot bargain to get protection against that kind of conduct. My time is up, and I appreciate the court's questioning, and I ask that the court reverse the rulings of the trial court.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Michael Brooks, registration number 25975, appearing on behalf of Lafarge North America, Inc. With me at council table and on the briefs is Larry McClung, also of my firm, Wells Anderson and Race. The district court in this case, both by Judge Barnhill and then by Judge Popovich, correctly concluded that the subcontract between Lafarge and KECI was unambiguous with respect to the indemnification and insurance provisions contained in paragraphs 9 and 10, and contained clear and unequivocal language requiring KECI to indemnify Lafarge for this particular claim, because this claim involved allegations of negligent or culpable conduct by Lafarge, and also involved allegations that the acts or omissions of KECI were at least in part a cause of the damages in the underlying lawsuit for which Lafarge sought indemnification.
Would that be the case even if the conduct is, as alleged in the complaint, intentional and willful?
Yes, Your Honor. Let me say this. The allegations in the complaint of intentional and willful and wanton conduct don't vitiate the requirement of defense, because there are also allegations of negligence. And here, where there's a settlement made and there is no factual finding about liability for intentional or willful and wanton conduct versus simply negligent conduct, and where, as in the case here, there's an actual disavowal of any liability that was in part of the release itself, there really isn't liability for intentional or willful and wanton conduct that's been established.
Well, there's been no finding of fault at all based on the record, has there?
Exactly. There has been no finding of fault at all.
But given the agreement, aren't you required to establish that there was at least partial fault on the part of KECI?
Well, I think that the term fault, to answer the court's question, first, the term fault imports some tort law concepts that I don't know that are particularly appropriate here. The specific contractual language that we're being called upon to address involves acts or omissions that are in whole or in part a cause, and leaving aside the question of whether it's culpable conduct of negligence, whether it's willful, or whether it's simply conduct that we don't impute any sort of fault to. And so really the question is whether there was an allegation of conduct that was in whole or in part a cause of the injuries alleged here. And
isn't the problem you settle out with the plaintiffs and then you turn to be indemnified and they say, well, wait, based on the contract, it's never been established that we were at fault at all, and we deny being at fault at all.
Okay. Well,
isn't that a problem for you?
I don't believe so, and there's two reasons for that. The first is that we have a series of undisputed facts here in this case that I think establish that there is at least partial causation being shown by KECI. The allegations in the underlying complaint may not take us all the way there, but those allegations, as the court pointed out, do allege fault by both parties, both KECI and Lafarge, and that fault was collective. So that's the first piece.
Well, when I was talking about allegations, I was talking about the duty to defend and how
sure.
that would trigger the duty to defend.
And I appreciate the
distinction.
Yes, and I appreciate the distinction. There's also two other pieces of evidence that are in the record, both of which were supplied by KECI. In KECI's summary judgment briefing, they appended to their motion for summary judgment the deposition transcript of Michael Sullivan, who's the shuttle buggy driver for Lafarge. And they appended it and they attached it and recited to it for a different purpose, but the testimony is there as part of their summary judgment briefing. And in that testimony, Sullivan does testify that if it had not been for the fact that this on-ramp was not closed, the accident would not have happened, in his belief. And
counsel,
so,
counsel,
yes.
Again, that's all well and good, but the court did not find, even on summary judgment, that KECI was actually at fault. I mean, the clause at issue here says that the act or the liability exists if it is arising in whole or in part of any act or omission of KECI.
Yes.
Not an alleged act or omission, an act or omission. So regarding the duty to indemnify, why isn't KECI correct that there has to be an actual finding of fact that it was at least partially at fault?
Well, one reason is that because they did not defend the case and because Lafarge was forced to settle the case on its own without their participation, under Burlington Northern, Lafarge was not required to seek and obtain an actual finding of fact, either of its own culpability or KECI.
Well, in Burlington Northern, the finding of fact had already been made.
Well,
here it hadn't been made.
Here, there was the issue about whether there was an act or omission by KECI that was part of the causal chain was an undisputed fact.
No,
it may
it
not
was
have been
alleged. It's certainly disputed by KECI.
Well, the fault element was disputed, but the notion that were it not for the non-closure of this on-ramp, the accident would not have occurred. I don't think that there's been any sort of factual dispute offered, any sort of evidence that said, oh no, even if that on-ramp had been closed, this accident would have happened. Even if our people were down there with the flags, this accident would have happened.
So under your interpretation, even had KECI never requested that the ramp be closed, because the ramp wasn't closed, that triggers liability.
Well,
to indemnify.
At the very least, there is, in this situation here, where there was a request, as KECI refers to in their opening brief, that it close the on-ramp, and where, according to their own expert, Herb Newbold, whose deposition transcript was attached to one of their reply briefs at page 88 of volume 2, he said that there were three, this was in their own pleadings, and in the deposition testimony of their own witness that was attached, he said there were three KECI employees who were available who could have walked down that on-ramp and closed it, but they chose to go a different way. And so with those factual circumstances presented here based upon the undisputed facts in this case, you know, Lafarge offered it as an undisputed fact that one of the causes of the injuries was the acts or omission of KECI, not suggesting specifically about fault, whether it be negligence or otherwise. And there's not been any evidence that has been presented to dispute that allegation of fact. There's not been anything that said, no, if KECI had been down there, this still would have happened because of Lafarge's negligence.
Well, as I understand the pleadings, though, the issue of fault wasn't an issue in summary judgment.
Well, but Your Honor, if I may, the issue of fault imputes an element of culpability. What we're just talking about here in terms of the in whole or in part language is a causation question, irrespective of culpability. There's no question that that KECI has contested vigorously the notion of whether it has fault in the culpability sense.
Well, but, I don't see any finding in the record by the trial court here that there was even an act or omission under your interpretation, any conduct that was a cause of this accident. No finding.
No finding specifically about that. But in Judge Popovich's order on the motion to reconsider, he talks about this notion that because the KECI failed to defend Lafarge, it had essentially waived the ability to challenge the issue of whether there was an issue about indemnity or whether there was an act or omission that triggered the indemnity obligation. And I'd like to talk about that waiver concept because I think what Judge Popovich was getting at was what Burlington Northern was talking about, which is when you have to settle out of a lawsuit as an indemnity under an indemnification agreement, and the indemnitor has not provided you with the defense that was called for under the agreement, and you're going it alone, that all that public policy and all that the law requires is that there be potential liability of the indemnity, and that the settlement be reasonable in its amount and be of good faith. Those are the things that the Burlington Northern Court said was required.
Does that case survive the Supreme Court decision in Cyprus?
Well, I think so, because Cyprus dealt with the duty to indemnify in an indemnification-only insurance policy. And, you know, in that case, the court addressed the somewhat different situation. And in that case, if I'm recalling it correctly, the court did say that you look at the underlying complaint and you look at the factual record as it's developed up to the point of settlement in determining whether a duty to indemnify is triggered. And I think that the principle that's at stake there, and that the thing that the court was getting at in Cyprus was similar to what Judge Briggs was talking about in Burlington Northern, and that is that really when an insurer or a contractual indemnitor doesn't step up to the plate early on in the case and act responsibly with respect to aiding in settlement, that the insured or the contractual indemnity is able to settle the case and is able to seek indemnification without having to produce specific findings of fact that would have shown certain things. But in this case, that KECI was specifically at fault because the factual record just is not going to be developed at the time of a settlement. And so if we were to require a contractual indemnity in the case of Burlington Northern, or an insured in the case of Cyprus, to develop a full factual record before it could get access to contractual indemnification, either by an insurance policy or an indemnification agreement, what that would mean is that cases would not settle, or that every settlement would guarantee a subsequent lawsuit to address the indemnification obligations. And that's the situation that we're faced with here.
Mr. Brooks, don't we always have that in malpractice actions, for example? We always have the case within a case. You always have to prove the underlying negligence, even if there was a settlement. And this is an insurance case, too, so why is this different?
Well, I think malpractice is a different situation. And there you're talking about a second lawsuit to prove the liability of the attorney for the what happened in the first lawsuit. And in duty to indemnify cases in the insurance context and otherwise, there have been a body of case law that has wanted to encourage settlement, and the process of encouraging settlement is frustrated when you have a situation where a party stands on its denial of any liability to defend or indemnify, and then you settle out on your own and are then unable to collect under the indemnification agreement, even though the duty to defend has been triggered, even though the undisputed facts establish the causal requirement necessary in order to trigger the duty to indemnify. And that's all that we're talking about here, is that causation piece, not the concept of fault, which I submit brings in additional components of culpability, which are very much in dispute. But the causation piece is not in dispute here, I don't think, in terms of the idea that but for the acts or omissions of KECI in failing to secure the base of that on-ramp, this accident would not have occurred. That was alleged in the underlying complaint, triggering the duty to defend. It was asserted in Michael Sullivan's deposition testimony appended to their summary judgment motion, showing it's an undisputed fact, at least for purposes of summary judgment. And it was repeated again in Mr. Newbold's testimony, which was appended as an exhibit to their reply in support of their motion to reconsider. And so the causation notion that really is at the heart of this in whole or in part any act or omission is something that was undisputed and didn't require a separate finding of fact in order for that indemnification obligation to be triggered under the indemnity agreement.
Counsel, your time is running out, but I do want to direct your attention to a third issue that we haven't discussed at all today, and that's the duty to provide insurance.
Yes.
And in this case, it involved primary insurance versus excess insurance.
Yes.
Is there any document that specifically requires KECI to provide primary insurance to your client in this case?
We submit that the indemnity agreement, or the contract itself, paragraph 9 of the subcontract, was the requirement that there be primary insurance.
Does it say specifically primary, or does it say general liability
insurance? It says general liability insurance. And in fact, when they provided the certificate of insurance, they had two boxes checked. And that certificate of insurance for the appropriate policy year is on the record at volume 1, page 336. And you'll see in there that they had the general liability box checked, and then they also had the excess box checked. And in the notes that followed, it was there was a note that said that it was general liability insurance that was being provided to Lafarge. And in fact, when Lafarge tendered its claim requesting general liability coverage, they said, oh, no, we're excess.
Didn't the reverse side of the form make it very clear it was excess?
There was an endorsement that at the very bottom said that this insurance is excess over any other valid and collectible insurance. But whether that established that they would treat it as excess or whether it would be co-primary and they would drop down is you know, something that was never really developed. But it's our position that
nobody from Lafarge raised that with them. Is that right?
That was not raised with them. That's correct. And frankly, they didn't anticipate that, you know, that this would be that coverage would be denied on the basis that they were excess insurance. If there are no further questions, Lafarge requests that the court affirm the trial court judgment in all respects. Thank you, court.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Thank counsel for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and we'll issue an opinion in due course. We're now ready for the second case on the 130 docket.